and welcome to the Code Mobile Weekly Podcast. My name is Steve Westgarth, and I'm going to be your host for the next 30 minutes. Each week on the podcast, I'm joined by somebody who is working within the mobile space. And today, I'm joined by Heather Burns, who is a tech policy and regulation specialist based in Glasgow. So hello, Heather. How are you?
How are you doing, Steve? Great to be here.
Fantastic to have you. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Now, obviously, it's been a couple of years now since I last met you. You were a speaker at the first Code Mobile we had back in 2017. And I know some of the attendees were fascinated by some of your insights, so I can't wait to hear what we're going to talk about today. I mean, your world of work is so interesting and fascinating, and there's so many things going on at the moment that I don't know how you keep up with everything.
You know, sometimes I think I must have been psychic when I decided to switch careers. Because when I moved over to working on these issues, whether it was privacy regulation, accessibility law, copyright issues, it was fascinating. It was really, but, you know, that's what it was. And all of a sudden, all of those issues are now front and center for all of us. So I picked a very good time to make it my life's work.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, you know, from my point of view, I think it couldn't be any more relevant because, you know, working in the indie space, you know, I have my own apps that I have in the App Store. You know, as a developer, you know, I'm forever collecting bits of data in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be that a user signs up to my app or to my service or to whatever it might be. And, you know, I'm not backed by a large corporation when I'm doing that. So I think that, you know, it's quite a scary thing, quite a scary world for me to be in. You know, I've got this responsibility to comply with all of the regulation that's out there, and the responsibility and the regulation that's on me is the same that we placed upon a big corporation.
That's very true. But one of the things I'm very proud of doing is working with people like yourselves and small agencies, even with sole traders, and just helping them to understand that there's a healthy way to approach it. And that's to do it not from a position of negative fear or resentment in terms of this is a legal obligation that we have to do or else, OMG, we're going to get a fine. It's really about taking simple, common sense steps to integrate healthy privacy practices into your workflow, into your business processes, into your development workflows, so that, number one, these legal issues never happen in the first place. But number two, your users have the protection they need and their information is protected, their dignity is protected. In some cases, maybe even their lives are protected just because of simple steps that you adopted.
Okay, so let's look at things which people will have heard of. So GDPR is a very hot topic at the moment. Yeah, obviously, it was implemented in May this year, I believe.
It was.
And it was a very scary thing. You know, I think the world went a bit mental sort of in April time this year as everybody suddenly decided they had to become GDPR compliant. So So what does GDPR actually mean for me as a developer?
Well, the important thing to remember about GDPR was very little of it was new. The majority of it was already dealt with in the existing European privacy framework, which you'll recall had been around since 1995. So I hate to say it, but a lot of the loudest screaming you heard about GDPR was a reflection of the fact that people realizing they were about to get in trouble for not having followed the rules they were supposed to be doing for 23 years in the first place. But again, it was very timely. Since May, which is when the enforcement deadline was, we've had the Cambridge Analytica scandals, we've had the Facebook data breaches, we're now talking about issues like electoral interference, and developers are waking up to the fact that data protection and user protection matter. And getting in good stead with GDPR is a starting point, but it can protect you and your end users from problems you never even foresaw. Look again at the Cambridge Analytica scandal where developers made Facebook quiz apps not knowing that the background information of those using them were being passed to a company that was manipulating elections. So I don't expect everyone to, you know, embrace GDPR and the European Privacy Framework with open arms. But what I do expect people to do is use it as a starting point for thinking a little bit more comprehensively and healthily about the development workflows, what data you capture as a developer, where you store it, why you store it, who you share it with, what information you give people, what rights they have over it. Just earlier today, I was looking at an app by a French research project, and it's called, hold on, what's it called? It's on my phone. It's called Exodus Privacy. And it's an Android app. And you download it, and as soon as you run it, it scans all of the apps on your phone and informs you what trackers are installed on them and what permissions are installed on them. So you can find out which apps on your phone are passing all of your browser and your using data to Facebook through pixels or Facebook ad tracking, even if you don't have a Facebook account. So GDPR has also created a lot more awareness in terms of everyday users that there are uses and misuses of my data that I might not have been aware of. And it's at least given people the questions they need to ask and the tools they need to use to start finding out how apps, how developers are capturing and using data.
Yeah, I mean it's a very interesting area because I mean I guess you're putting myself into the position of a user. I guess it's what I would consider to be reasonable to be done with my own data. You know, if I want to access a website or a service or something online, I would say it's perfectly reasonable that I have to give some of my data to that site. You know, it's fairly well accepted that I would probably hand over my email address, would create an account, would give my name. You know, so there's a certain amount of information that I guess anybody is generally happy to give your certain services because they would recognize that that is needed for that service to be able to operate effectively, and there's a reason for them having the data. I guess where the lines get blurred is when, first of all, that data is shared with people that I don't know that it's being shared with. But then I guess also where the data is pooled, and that I guess is one of the dangers of Facebook, that because they have access to such a plethora of my data, they're able to start making assumptions about me that perhaps I'm not able to actually, rationalize what they're actually able to work out about me, my life, or what I'm actually doing.
That's absolutely correct. It's interesting that one of the smaller companies caught up in the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which actually received a data protection fine from the ICO, was, I think it was called Emma's Diary, which is one of these apps for women who are expecting a baby. It's basically a means of journaling your 9 months, and indeed the months before and the months after that. So, I mean, I did this myself when I was expecting a baby. I kept a little journal. It was on a website where I could meet and speak with other expectant mothers at exactly the same point that I was. But that was 12 years ago. Things have changed now. And what people didn't realize about these apps were that they were capturing all sorts of data through multiple trackers. And I think that's a big issue for the development space. Why does a single app need 12 separate trackers? And some of their info was being passed to any number of third parties, which in this case actually included the Labour Party. Because someone made some sort of leap of logic to say that expectant mothers are likely to vote Labour. So for using a pregnancy tracker diary app, your data was being sold to the Labour Party. Strange, ridiculous things like that are, I hate to say it, Steve, but that's why we have GDPR. GDPR was not a government coming in heavy-handed legislating just for the sake of it. GDPR was a direct response to the abuses of data that have actually happened. And if we as developers played a part in making that happen, what we have an obligation to do is to make sure we're doing healthy, respectful practices in our workflows, in our businesses, so that stricter and more punitive regulation doesn't come along, particularly after Brexit, when the UK government will be free to create any sort of laws they choose, legislating the internet outside the protections of the EU human rights regime. So don't think that anything we're going to have after Brexit is going to be any better than what we had within Europe. I'm wagering it's going to be a lot more restrictive.
No, I bet it will be actually. Now, I mean, it opens up an interesting dilemma, isn't it? Because I think that technology generally doesn't respect country borders anymore. You know, I can develop and release an app which goes into the App Store, which is accessed by people literally worldwide. Now, it's all very well and good to say I've got a good idea of the legislation that applies here in my country, but if you said, you know, for example, if somebody in Korea or Japan or Hong Kong downloaded my app, I've got no idea how their data privacy laws vary from the laws here in the UK. So what should I be doing as a developer to take that into consideration in my thinking? Is there something I should be doing differently to identify and keep control or to help users in other jurisdictions to make sure I'm protecting their data in the way their governments would expect?
Well, there's three things you can do, Steve. The first you should do is work to the data protection and privacy laws of your own country. For us, at the moment, can't say this a year from now, but it's the UK within the EU. I met many amazing people from continental Europe at Code Mobile, so they will all be obliged to follow the laws of the EU within their own countries, such as France, Germany. And for your American listeners, it's worth pointing out that privacy law is coming in the United States. It's traditionally been a bit of a desert in terms of any privacy legislation, at least as we know it here, but that is coming. So the first thing to do is follow your own privacy law. The second is to determine, as you said, you're putting an app on the store and you sort of made it for your own country, but you can tell it's becoming popular in other countries. If you're able to tell that it is becoming popular in a country where it's going to become an issue for you should probably look into that country's privacy legislation. Now, your 25 users in, oh, I don't know, Malaysia, probably aren't going to be a problem for you. Your 200,000 in the United States will. So it's worth keeping in mind that if the figures determine that a considerable portion of your revenue or your user base, even if it's a free app and there is no revenue, come from a country, a data protection regulator can ask you about that. They can say, hold on, you've got 500,000 downloads here. Why aren't you protecting those 500,000 users? So the third thing you can do, and this is something I've been advocating at various conferences and open source projects, is to work to some sort of transparent, accountable privacy framework. Even if that's not GDPR because you don't have European customers, that still doesn't get you off the hook. You have to be able to demonstrate ethically that you are working to some sort of standard, whether that's a law, whether that's a value-based framework, whether that's principles, but they have to be public, they have to be transparent, they have to be accountable, and as I say, they have to pass the laugh test. You know, the days of saying things like, we respect the privacy of our users, they're over and not before time. You have to demonstrate, in order to win people's trust, what you're doing, why you're doing it, what rights people have over it. So, whatever system you choose to use, whether that's the legal framework you are obliged to follow because you come from a country with one, or your own sort of development principles, which you can hold yourself to account to, work to them because working to something is better than working to nothing.
I think that's very good advice. I think you're right that, you know, that there is lots of advice out there, and actually, you know, just taking a framework, I guess in many ways it doesn't matter which framework, as long as, you know, it is a recognized, respected framework, then at least you point to something you are doing that lots of other people are doing. And I guess, you know, following the good practice potentially that you would hope larger corporations and larger companies are doing is a good thing to do. But then of course you have, you know, in the media, you know, some of these large companies like Facebook in the last few weeks have had their huge £500,000 fine, the largest the ICO can leverage upon them for their data breach. You know, so actually, you know, maybe following what big companies are doing isn't always the right thing to do. I don't know.
You know, one of the big misperceptions I try to work against in all my public speaking is because privacy is so frequently associated with law and legal requirements, that scares people away. I don't want to get too stereotypical, but I have to push back against this a lot with American audiences, and I don't have to do this with the European audiences. Because Americans don't have any sort of privacy framework like we do here, when you say privacy to them, they think, oh my God, law. Not just, oh my God, law, they think, oh my God, Europe telling us what to do. And they run in another direction. So, what I spend a lot of time doing is getting people to understand that privacy is not about law. Data protection is not about legal obligations. It's about doing the right thing by your users. So, the first step has to be adopting a healthy mindset to not run away from privacy because you might have a perception that it's associated with law and government and punishments. That's not what it's about. So the first step is shift your thinking, and it gets a lot easier from there.
No, I guess it does, but I mean, you're working in the indie space, so I mean, you're surely these big fines the ICO leverage couldn't be leveraged on me.
Well, I always say the fines are, I wish the fines discussion didn't happen. You know, in all the speaking that I do, I never mention fines. Fines are in future and always have been proportional to the offense and the business size. So the Facebook fines are absolutely deserved. When you're working on that scale and that gravity, yes. Fines, however, are only ever applied not just in the UK, throughout most European countries as the fourth and final stage of an exhaustive process. If a user or a member of the public flags up to a data protection regulator that there's a privacy concern, that data protection regulator will actually work with you. They'll come in, sit down with you, speak with you, explain how to improve your workflows, and you might get lucky and leave with what's called an understanding, which is a formal document where you agree to shape up, tighten up, and not make these mistakes again. Where fines come into play is if you've either taken on their advice and then ignored it, or repeated your mistake, or if you've done something which is quite clearly beyond the pale, that has caused actual harm or could have caused serious harm. Basically, you'd know it when you smelled it. If the regulator comes in and says nothing in this privacy issue or data breach was permissible or excusable, that's when you're going to get a fine. So the trick, Steve, is to get yourself in shape, follow best privacy practices, make sure you're in good stead with privacy law, whatever that is, so that, God forbid, when the regulator comes knocking, you're not looking like a deer in the headlights and placing yourself into a position where a punitive fine is all but guaranteed.
I think that's really good advice, Heather. So I guess, obviously we've talked a lot about privacy there. I guess another area your work is taking you into the moment is with regards to Brexit. And I mean, you've already mentioned that. So once Brexit happens next March, is life going to change for me? Or do you think that, essentially it's just about doing the things that you're advising me to do now?
I honestly cannot answer any of that because I don't know. And that's a little scary that 5 months out, none of the questions pertaining to our work as digital and tech professionals have been decided or sorted with any sort of confidence that we can build our work on. We do know that we are staying in the European data protection system for at least the time being because we are working to GDPR. It's also worth remembering that if you want to continue doing business in Europe after we leave the European Union, you will continue to have to follow European digital policy regulation for your European customers. So what I tell people is just pretend Brexit wasn't happening in terms of those things because you're still going to have to follow those regulations for your European customers in the future. If there's any sector where the notion of the UK becoming an isolated island with its own little rules makes no sense whatsoever, it's tech and digital, isn't it? We are borderless, we are seamless. I hop on planes and I'm in European countries before 9 in the morning. We will all continue to be interconnected, but the hope is that And I hope this doesn't happen, but I fear for it, that after we leave the European digital system, we get a bunch of reactionary legislation that regulates the internet into something we can barely recognize. It might look like some sort of walled garden from 1995 that could be very censored and controlled and restricted. There's a lot of moves to, they're very keen on things like age verification, so they know that young people aren't spending too much time online on social media. Sounds great, right? Well, the only way you can do that is by basically monitoring everybody's internet usage by a personally identifiable thing. So they know that Stephen Westgarth has been online for 18 hours today looking at such and such. So it's important for all of us as digital professionals to represent our industry and our work after Brexit to ensure that the post-European digital rules that we all work to are not restrictive and reactionary, which is going to make your worst nightmares about EU legislation look like a dream, frankly.
No,
And I'm
I'm.
trying to be positive and optimistic, but I think we all have to be very realistic and cautious in the years to come.
I think one of the big problems that we have is that, particularly in governments, you have politicians that don't necessarily understand the technical problems that sit behind some of the things that they're asking for. I know that there was a thing, I think last year, when the Home Office was looking at WhatsApp and some of these chat-based apps that exist, and saying, well, how can it be possible that people can share information without us, almost having a back door or a key to get in to read that? And I think, it's a very scary thought that any government or any one body could have such a key to actually access, that sort of data. It's a very, very dangerous precedent to set.
It absolutely is. So it's our responsibility, again, as digital professionals, to work constructively and respectfully with policymakers and legislators in the years to come to ensure that whatever sort of laws govern our work from now on, that they are reflective of our work and the actual reality of things like you can't legislate mathematics, which is what legislating encryption is, after all, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is.
So, this will be a test for all of us in many ways, more ways than one, that we can't basically decide to become professional victims. We've all got to step up and represent here. And I look forward to supporting businesses that need help on that.
So if you were to consider what you think is the biggest challenges that face us as a digital industry over the next, 3 or 5 years, what do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for us?
Wow. We only have a half hour for this podcast, Stephen.
And policy is moving at such a rapid rate, right? I mean, look at what's happened even over the last 12 months. I guess your work is radically different to what you were doing 12 months ago.
Oh, it's unrecognizable. I literally found a to-do list from last autumn in a box somewhere, and it was just wow. It might as well have been 10 years ago. I think privacy, again, is going to be a big thing, particularly as the US works to some sort of legislation which is coming. And I don't think that's a bad thing because, as I said at the beginning of our talk, I like the fact that developers, certainly the Code Mobile audience and many of your listeners, are waking up to the fact that privacy and data protection, it's not about law, it's about protecting people, it's about doing the right thing. And I'm so heartened to see how conscientious developers are starting to be about thinking about those difficult questions, even before they've even started the work, which is how it should be done. I think you're hearing a lot right now about the SplinterNet, which is the de facto emergence of three separate internets, the US internet, the European internet, and the Chinese internet. And it does bring up the notion, which I tend to agree with because it's certainly looking inevitable, that the internet is going to start growing walls. And we need to be very mindful about the fact that what is normal for us is not normal for others. You certainly think see things about, for example, the Chinese, the scoring system, how your personal behavior is part of your it's like a personal credit score. Not about your money, but about your integrity as an individual. And we need to look over that and think, is that the sort of Orwellian future that we want in the European or American internet? So we have to be mindful of the fact that, the notion of Barlow cyberspace as a borderless utopia was a myth. And it's good that we're starting to recognize that it is a myth, but we need to be really realistic about how we sort of take that in to change the way we work on the web. Privacy is a thing, the splinternet is a thing, and certainly for us in Europe, the shifting face of the European digital single market system, plus the notion, Steve, that you and I are about to go out of it, that's going to be a bit of a headache, but I'm happy to share the paracetamol with you.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, we can only control what we can control, right? And the reality is that some of these decisions around Brexit and decisions that governments make, are going to be made, come what may. And I think we can only control our little part of the world, and make sure that we are doing what we can to make it a better place.
That's great advice, Steve.
I'm sure. So, I mean, obviously, you do lots of talking at conferences, Heather. I mean, where have you been talking recently?
I've had a really interesting year. I briefly lost track of what country I was in. I've spoken here in Scotland. I've spoken a couple times in England. I was in Northern Ireland. I was in the Netherlands. I was in Serbia, and I was in Germany.
Wow. So you've had lots of travel.
Lots of travel. My daughter's been trolling me. She says to me, "Mom, shouldn't you be at a conference this weekend?" And I momentarily fly into a panic, thinking that I actually am. Because she knows she's going to get a laugh out of that. And it's just been, again, it's so rewarding to speak to developers about user protection issues and to watch the light bulb going on over their heads. I got a really interesting bit of feedback from a talk I did last month here in Scotland, which is someone said they listened to my talk and decided not to create an app they've always wanted to do. Which might sound like very strange feedback to get, but they realized after listening to my talk that the ethical and privacy issues could not be justified.
Wow, I mean that's a big decision for a company to make. I mean they're essentially hanging your a commercial decision purely based upon what you've said to them at a conference.
I know, and that's a bit of a scary thing, but what would the alternative have been? I don't know the details of the app. But so it's been really exciting. One thing, for example, I've been involved in is putting in a proposal to start a cross-platform privacy working group to join up the privacy teams on WordPress.org, which I am on, and Drupal and Joomla and a number of the smaller content management systems so that all of our privacy teams, who remember are all volunteers, can share resources and briefings and information and code libraries and even meet up in person every now and then. So that we can share what we're doing on each other's projects, share what we're doing on the code level. We ran some numbers, and our CMS projects put together power 75% of the sites on the open web.
Wow.
So, right there, if we can get this group going, little actions we take together and within our own projects can improve the privacy standards for 75% of the sites on the web. And that's an absolute privilege to be involved with.
I think that's a fantastic aspiration, and I think you're right that the more we talk and collaborate and work together as a community, the stronger we become as a community. Because yes, on one level, I guess various different CMSs could be seen as being in competition with each other, but the reality is people are going to choose to go down that route or a different route for their own reasons based upon features or capabilities of a platform. And actually, I don't think that that there is really a problem with your developers on these different teams working together and sharing that knowledge and best practice.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's that, absolute buzz that happens in a room when everyone's on the same page, but coming to it from very different angles, and I'm really looking forward to us learning from each other.
No, absolutely. I think it's a brilliant thing to be involved with. So then, have you got many conferences coming up? Have you got many travel plans over the next few months?
I've got a couple of things slotted up for next year, but I am quite frankly looking forward to my winter hibernation. The suitcase is in the cupboard for now. Next year, let's see where the road takes me. And I'm certainly
Absolutely.
looking forward to being at Code Mobile. I so enjoyed speaking with everyone last year. And again, it was sort of like you were just saying, people working on very different projects from very different perspectives. And just seeing what happens when you all sit around a table and shoot the breeze and find out that you've all got similar issues that you didn't realize. So I'm really looking forward to meeting everyone again in the spring.
Absolutely. Well, we're very much looking forward to welcoming you back to Chester again for Code Mobile in April. Can't wait to have you there. If you've inspired people by what you've been saying on the podcast today, maybe you've hit a nerve with some people and they're really interested in what you've got to say. What's the best way for people to contact you?
So I'm on Twitter at WebDevLaw, and my website is webdevlaw.uk.
And I know just you're speaking from experience, since I met you last year, there have been a number of times when I've referred to your website and went and looked at some of the articles you've been pushing up there. I think you're quite a lot of the issues that I'm sort of dealing with and things you come across, you've covered all sorts of things on there that I think is invaluable to many projects. So I'd highly recommend going and have a look at the website. It's really well worth a look.
Thank you.
No, no problem at all. Well, Heather, thank you very much for joining me on the Code Mobile Weekly podcast tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure having you talk to me for the last half an hour. I hope that some of our listeners have enjoyed sort of you hearing about all of your insights into privacy by design and all of those things we should be doing as developers. And hopefully, it will inspire people to make sure that we take greater care of our users' privacy in the future. So, thank you very much for that.
My pleasure, and if anyone can't wait in Chester, please get me and let me know how I can support your project.
I'm sure that's very much appreciated by everyone. Thank you very much. So you've been listening to the Code Mobile Weekly podcast. That podcast comes out every Sunday. So please do download it and tell everybody about it. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please let us know. You can tweet us at Code Mobile UK. And also, if you know of anybody who would like to speak on the podcast or there's any particular topics you would like us to cover, please do let me know. This is a podcast that has to be directed by the listeners. So please do. You'll let me know where you want us to take it to, and we'll see if we can find some people that can share content that you're interested in. So, thank you very much for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you again next Sunday. Thank you very much.